if you're a lieutenant or a captain, whatever that looks like, a sergeant, whatever that looks like in an organization, like, you're a leadership development program. Like the way you carry yourself, the way you treat people, the way you treat your bosses, the things you do on calls, like the way you manage the firehouse, like people are paying attention to those things. So in the absence of those formal programs, you have to be mindful of the fact that people are watching you and you are their leadership development.
The First Responder Liaison Network is proud to present to you the Kitchen Table Podcast. Join us as we explore leadership from perspectives around the globe, from firefighters to fire chiefs, civilians to CEOs. Our conversations have one simple goal: build more leaders.
Good morning and welcome everyone to the Kitchen Table. The Kitchen Table is brought to you by the First Responder Liaison Network. The network is organized for the development, implementation, and ongoing support of mentorship and professional development programs, inspiring our youth and young adults to mature into engaged civic leaders and resilient community sentinels. Music and graphics are brought to you by Kite Elephant Productions. We're back in the East Coast today in Virginia for episode 49. The conversation today dives into training versus drilling and how one of the most important roles of the company officer is being an effective instructor. We're talking time management and my personal favorite, when you become a leader, you give up the right to think about yourself. And for the departments out there that don't have formal leadership development programs, remember, company officers are walking leadership development programs for your organization. Our guest today is a battalion chief with Norfolk Fire and Rescue in Virginia. He is currently assigned to the city's 3rd Battalion. He's a state instructor for both the Virginia Department of Fire Programs and the National Fire Academy, focusing on Mayday, strategy and tactics, and high-rise fire operations. Our guest serves as a committee member for NFPA 14 and is a graduate of the National Fire Academy's Executive Fire Officer Program. He holds a master's degree in executive leadership from Liberty University. Prior to working for the city of Norfolk, he served on board the USS Iwo Jima as a damage controlman and a search and rescue swimmer. He's been featured in several fire service publications and lectures across the country on the importance of strong company-level leadership. Our guest is author of the book, No Nonsense Leadership, A Realistic Approach for the Company Officer. Today, we welcome Battalion Chief Jared Sergi onto the Kitchen Table. Good morning on the West Coast, but good afternoon on the East Coast. How are you, Chief?
Hey, I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. And it's Chief Doan, we'll say here, Chief Doan over there in Gig Harbor from the Leadership Challenge said that I should reach out to you because you'd be a phenomenal addition to the show. And so thank you, Chief Doan, and thank you, Chief Sergi, for being here. But before we just jump into this conversation on leadership, would you mind sharing a little bit about Jared Sergi, a little bit who you are and kind of your upbringing, maybe your early career, and then we'll just jump in it.
Yeah, of course. So I was born and raised out in Southern California, so out there on the West Coast, not too far outside the Los Angeles area. And growing up, I really wasn't one of those kids that had my sights set on the fire service early. I really didn't. In fact, I wanted to be a cop for the longest time. I can remember cutting out like little cardboard, like fake guns and like watching cop movies and like running around, doing that kind of stuff and putting in my little belt. So that was me. And then I just changed over time. I went into high school and they had an explore program. I think it was through the Boy Scouts, if I remember right, but it was an explore program. And so someone introduced me to that, something to just keep me busy. So then I was kind of, stepping foot in the firehouse, talking to the firefighters, kind of seeing what they're doing. Now, my grandfather, he retired as a firefighter. He was a captain in LA County. So I was familiar, but even growing up, I don't remember asking a whole lot of questions about the fire service. I just didn't have that interest yet, So going through high school in the Explorer post, and then, of course, I got a little taste of it, went through EMT school, and I was like, all right, this is what I want to do. And in Southern California, to get hired on some of the smaller suburban departments, you had to have your paramedic certificate. I didn't have that. And I was struggling to make ends meet. I wasn't living at home. I was kind of a punk-ass little kid. And I was working at Del Taco,
I do know Del Taco. Yes, I do.
Yeah. And so Del Taco wasn't really going to help me cover paramedic school. And so I'm like, look, what do I do? Like, I don't know if college is for me. I really wasn't applying myself back then, and I just needed some direction. So I ended up joining the military, and, you know, they have that big advertisement, you know, they'll give you $20,000 for college. And I thought, what the hell, that'll cover paramedic school.
Yeah.
So I went into the recruiter's office. I told him what I wanted to do. And, you know, that I said, look, I want to be a firefighter when I get out. I'm like, oh, we got the job for you, buddy.
I bet.
And so damage control is what I ended up doing. So I joined the Navy, did about 6 years, was a damage controlman. Everybody in the Navy gets shipboard firefighting, you know. The damage mm-hmm. controlmen on the ship are the ones who train the ship's force in firefighting. Had an opportunity to go to search and rescue swimmer school. So I did that. I went to school down in Florida for that for a few months. And then, so that's what I did. And as I was getting out, I really enjoyed my time in the military. I did. And a lot of the leadership stuff that we talk about today and some of the stuff that's in my book, a lot of that I really got introduced. It was introduced to me when I was in the military. And so really enjoyed my time there. I'm not one of those people that was like, I can't wait to get the heck out. You know, I got out. I enjoyed what I did. I met some great people I still keep in touch with to this day. And I wanted to move on, and I still had my sights set on the fire service, and I just applied everywhere, you know, all over the place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I never went back to the West Coast of California. I still had family that was there at the time, but I was just so rooted, you know, in the East Coast. I said, let me just drop some applications in a few departments, and everywhere to DC, out to Richmond, and everything in between. And Norfolk was the first one that grabbed me. So that's where I've been ever since.
Wow. And so you moved all the way up to Virginia, not all the way up, but you stayed on the East Coast, but you mm-hmm. just said, I want to go up to Virginia. So Virginia yeah. wasn't necessarily where you were aspiring nor grown up nor was.
No, it's fun. No, it's funny you say it. Cause even I remember when I got my orders, you know, there's a big base in San Diego, and yes. where I was living in California, that was probably about 2 hours away from where I was. And I can remember requesting that on my dream sheet, like three times, like San Diego one, right. San Diego two, San Diego three.
Never went.
And oh. I didn't go. And I remember getting my orders, and they're like, hey, you're going to Norfolk, Virginia. I'm like, Norfolk, where is that? Like,
oh,
Virginia?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going all the way across the country. Yeah. And I think the farthest west or east I had been at that point was Colorado to visit family. But I mean, I wow. was out there
yeah.
on my own, and
here we 18, are.
19 years old, just kind of figuring yeah. it out. And I just stuck around. Yeah.
Wow. The things that, you know, life will, you know, bring us to, and I know this conversation today, we'll talk a lot about, you know, ending up where, you know, being in a spot to where you may not have thought of or aspired to be, but there you are, but probably wouldn't have changed anything. Right. I mean, it's, you're at where you're at, and it's kind of supposed to be that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've been thankful for everywhere that I've been, all the experiences that I've had, the relationships that I've had, it's all worked out. I've been very lucky throughout the course yes. of my career. Yeah.
Yes. I do have your book, No Nonsense Leadership, and it's an easy read. First of all, thank you for that. For people like me that can't pull up through, you know, 400 page novels, but 138 yeah, pages, first edition. But I understand there's a second edition out there. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
There is, yeah. I think we were talking before we hit record. I think it's been out for a couple months now.
Oh, okay.
And so the reason I did it was I actually had somebody ask me about writing another book, and I was like, man, I don't know if I have the time.
Sure.
I don't know if I have the energy to just dedicate to doing that. And I don't know if I have the content, to be honest. You know, I'm like, I don't know what I would write about. You know, my passion is leadership. Like, I could write another one. I was actually considering writing a book simply on followership, but I was like, no, I don't know if I have the content and to do that. So what I did was I said, well, it's been, I don't know how long it had been, 5 years, probably more, since I wrote the first one. I said, look, I've,
yeah.
new experiences, new perspectives, like I can add to each one of those chapters. So that's what I did. I went through each chapter and I read through them again. And I said, let me add this. Let me tweak this. Let me add more content here. I actually added two more chapters to the book and then a little section in the back. So a little bit more content in the first one. So you read the first one, you read the second one, there's going to be some similarities, but it's more, I expand on a few more things and I add a few more things. Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. And I also understand that Chief Doan did the foreword to the book. Is that right?
He did. So, yeah.
Chief Doan, who's a previous guest on the show, as you know, that's how we're here because the Leadership Challenge. But I don't think he ever told me the story on how you guys know each other. So he obviously wrote the foreword to your book because obviously mm-hmm. you and him are fairly close. I'll go ahead and throw that out there. So tell us your relationship between you and Chief Doan.
So I first met Dennis out at the National Fire Academy in EFO.
Ah.
And I don't remember what year we met, but it was a 4-year program at the time. It's changed now, but it was either my first or second year that I met him. And, you know, he just had this charisma. You know, he's just a great guy, this charismatic leadership style. And I would just hear him speak in class, and he would just share his experiences and some stories, and just it just one of those guys to me, like, can immediately draw people into him and people listen to him. It just he captures an audience. And so I just started looking up to him right away and followed him on social media. We kept in touch. And I can remember going out when he was the fire chief out in Boise, going out and doing a couple days of my company officer leadership program there for him and his officers and some of his firefighters. And I had an opportunity to ride around with him and, you know, and visit different places, houses, and just seeing the way he interacted with his people and seeing the way that those people interacted with him. I can tell he had a lot of respect. You know, the firefighters and the officers had a lot of respect for Dennis and the way he did things. And I was always admired his kind of vision. He's like, this is where we're going, this is what we're doing. And he's one of those guys that he sticks to it. You know, he doesn't waver. And so I've always just looked up to Dennis. I think he's a great guy. I think he's a great fire chief. And I don't know if I'll ever be in the position that he is, but he definitely is the model that I would want to follow. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So I've heard you already talk so much about leadership, and then you've already mentioned followership several times. So let's start the conversation right here, because it's a quote straight from your book. I actually labeled it, highlighted it, and wrote it right here. It's page 42. You wrote, "There is no greater privilege than the privilege to lead people. Every single day when you cross the threshold of that firehouse, your firefighters are at the top of your priority list, right next to the mission of the fire department." Now, I know we could probably sit there and talk the entire day on that, but I thought that was a very powerful statement. It's so true, talking about the privilege of leading people. So let's go ahead and just start there. Talk about what that means to Jared Sergi and why that's why you started off one of your chapters with that exact quote.
Yeah, I will. So, you know, I think that's something that we miss. The message that sometimes we forget to send to our company officers is, you know, you're going to go through this process, you're going to get paid a little bit more, you're going to have a little bit more responsibility, a little bit more administrative responsibility. But the biggest piece that we need to make sure that we really, really reinforce is, yeah, you're going to get all those things, but at the end of the day, you have this privilege of being able to lead groups of people. And these people will listen to you, depending on your style, your attitude, your actions. So, you know, you filling that role as the company officer, you have this privilege to work with different people and personalities and really kind of help them charter the course throughout their career. You know, I've seen situations where a firefighter has been in a firehouse and they have a company officer that steps in and completely turns that person around. Like they reinvigorate them, they re-inspire them, they get them on a path within the course of their career. And it could drive them straight to the top. So to be able to have that ability and that privilege as a company officer, I think is something that we have to really make sure that that's a message that we need to make sure we're sending to people before we promote them. Right. You know, looking out for people I've mentioned the military already. I mean, that was just beaten into my head when I was a young sailor in the Navy. And it was just, you know, you look out for your people, you look out for your people, you look out for look out for your shop, look out for your division. It was just, I had that constant message being beaten into me. And I just carried that with me into the firehouse. And it was just like, man, how fortunate am I to be able to be in this position and create a reputation, create a culture within a firehouse that people will want to model, that people want to follow, that want to recreate in other firehouses. It's just such a cool position to be in if you really take it seriously and do it the right way.
In your department, I asked this question. Mm-hmm. I've asked actually a few times. What is your leadership development in terms of, like, in your company officers? Is there like a curriculum that sets you up for success in becoming a company officer to not ensure, but to equip those aspiring to be great leaders? Or what does that look like at Norfolk Fire?
Yeah, so we don't have anything formal, right? We don't have any programs before nor after you promote. Now, we have the basic classes that you have to have, but it's nothing crazy, certainly nothing that gets you really ready for the right front seat. So we don't really have anything formal. Our leadership development for us is, you know, the officer that you work with every single day. And we're working on it. You know, we're trying to find a realistic leadership program that fits our department, you know, that we can, that's sustainable over several years, that we can, you know, that we can make work with staffing and all those kinds of things that fire departments have to work with, but nothing formal. So for us, it comes down to our company officers. And that's another thing that I really try to make sure people understand is, even people in my own organization, but certainly everywhere, is like, look, leadership officer development programs are great, right? Like I'm a fan of them. I want one. When I was in the training division, I really wanted to push one off the ground. I ended up transferring before I can really get some work done on it. But, you know, if you're a lieutenant or a captain, whatever that looks like, a sergeant, whatever that looks like in an organization, like, you know, you're a leadership development program. Like the way you carry yourself, the way you treat people, the way you treat your bosses, the things you do on calls, like the way you manage the firehouse, like people are paying attention to those things. So in the absence of those formal programs, you have to be mindful of the fact that people are watching you and you are their leadership development. And if nobody did that for you, then they needed to make sure you go out and give yourself the tools and the resources to be able to do that for other people. You know, if I've come up through the ranks and I'm like, well, nobody invested any time in me. I mean, that's unfortunate, obviously, but you got to go out and make yourself the expert, you know, like go out and, you know, there's, like we were talking before, there's so many opportunities now with podcasts and classes and conferences, like go out and give yourself the tools and the resources, invest in yourself so you can in turn invest in other people. Because if you don't do that, like you might manage their day and you're going to run the calls, but you might not be able to give them a tomorrow, you know, and that's what you want to do if you're in that position as a company officer. We could sit there and we could blame our chiefs. We could blame our department about, oh, we should have this program. We should have this. Why don't we have this? I get that. I get down on some of that. But at the end of the day, that's up to us, right? We have to make the decision that when I come to work every day, I am going to provide leadership development. You know, I'm a new battalion chief. Yeah. And even now, I have some newer officers that are coming into my battalion. And it's like every quarter, I want to do something for the company officers in my battalion. Like we're going to meet at the training center. We're going to go over a topic, whether it be strategy and tactics or leadership or management performance evaluations. It doesn't matter. It's like, but that's something that I can do on my own. You know, that's something you can do on your own. You can develop your people. So we just have to put ourselves again in a position to be able to do that for others.
I coin that term and give you and reference you every time I say it. You are the leadership development program in your department. Right. Now you, as a company officer, you're a walking program for leadership development informally or formally even. I mean, that's awesome. Thank you for saying that. Cause that's such a,
and I was lucky. Awesome. I mean, I truly was, you know, and people don't know what they don't know. Like, you know, I'm not criticizing folks that don't go out there and provide leadership to their folks. Like the question I have is like, why aren't we like, who has helped them? Like, why aren't we helping this lieutenant or captain be a good mentor in their station? Like, they don't know what they don't know, you know, like me, I had an awesome captain coming up as a firefighter. Like my leadership and my officer development program was watching him, you know, and so he provided me with tools and training and guidance and all that stuff. And it's like, I'm nobody special. Like the only reason that I've been able to do all those things is because somebody did it for me.
You know? And so, I mean, in turn, because of that, not just because of that, but because that's what we do as a profession, is we in turn do it for the next person as well. So you mentioned several times in your book, accountability. So in fact, we're going to talk about the importance of training and accountability. You mentioned it in three different sections. I highlighted in your core value section, building teams, and then looking out for your people. So obviously accountability is very important. So as we talk about individuals, you know, needing to, you know, we all aspire and wish our departments would pay for us to go through X amount of classes to develop ourselves, you know, personally, professionally, and so forth. But sometimes that's not the case, right? But there's accountability in self, like what you talked about. We got to get out there and do it ourselves. You know, if someone didn't provide it for us, okay, is it the end of the road? No, we got to go out there and do it and seek it. So can you talk about the importance of training, but also the importance of holding yourself accountable to that high standard and to just go out there and do it? Because like you said, you are the walking leadership program in your department.
Yeah. So my department's no different than a lot of others. You know, we can only afford to send people to certain things. You know, we can't, you know, we sent people to FDIC recently. That was the new thing that we've done. We're going to continue to do it this year, but little conferences that pop up here and there, training events, we just can't afford to do that. And kind of like I already mentioned, you know, like you have to invest in yourself, and there's a balance with everything, right? We all have friends, we have family, we have things that happen outside the fire department. You have to manage that thing, and that's a whole nother conversation. But you have to be willing to go out and get training, because again, especially if we're talking about company officers, you know, when I was a captain, I rode an engine. You know, I'm a captain by title, but if if I'm going to expect my firefighters to be good engine firefighters or ladder firefighters or rescue or med, whatever it is, that I have to, once again, I have to be able to provide them the tools to do so. Now, maybe I get lucky, right? Maybe I land in a firehouse where they're good to go. Like they've done all those things. They're going out, they're taking classes. They're self-starters. They're developing themselves. That's probably easy for me.
Yeah.
But that's not always going to be the case, right?
Exactly.
You're going to have people that need that. Hey, Cap, how do I force this door? How do I stretch this line up to this third story apartment? How do I do all these things? And if we're in a position where it's like, I don't really know, or, you know, I never really trained on that before, that's not a position that we want to put ourselves in. And I think it has to be an ongoing process. You know, when it comes to training, when you're a firefighter, you're worried about those tasks, right? Stretching lines, forcing doors, providing good EMS, searches, whatever, right? So you're learning all those tasks. When you become a company officer, you have to kind of learn to train, right? You still have to do all those things. You still have to be good at all those things, at least in my opinion. But yep. Now you have to learn to train. You have to figure out how to reach different people and personalities. And this person learns this way, and this person learns that way, in addition to you continuing to develop yourself, because there's no finish line, right?
Like, right, exactly.
At least there shouldn't be. We shouldn't get reach lieutenant or captain or chief and say, oh,
I'm there, right?
I'm
to done.
Kind of kick back in the recliner. Yeah. I don't have to do anything from here anymore. It doesn't work that way. In fact, it should be the opposite. You should be out there trying to do more.
Agreed.
You know, I believe that firefighters want to go out the door, and I believe that they want to be confident, and I believe that they want to do a good job. And, you know, nobody wants to go out there and do bad.
Right.
You may think they do, but they don't. So, you know, providing training to your firefighters to be competent firefighters is going to make them confident. Confident firefighters are happy
That's
firefighters.
Right.
That's just the way it is.
Yep.
So you have to do that with your folks. You have to provide them that training. And I don't care if you're the busiest. I don't care if you're the slowest. I mean, I've been in the slowest engine company in the city, and I've served on the busiest engine company in the city. And I can tell you there's one common denominator when it comes to success on the fire ground or the back of the medic unit, and it is people's training and their preparation and their standards. Like, I've seen busy companies that don't invest any time into training show up, and they got this bravado about them, and they're a disaster on the fire ground. I've seen it at slow stations, but I've seen the opposite too. I've seen the slow houses show up and hit a freaking home run, and it comes down to their training and their discipline and their standards, and they hold each other accountable at the end of the day.
Agreed. You noted this. One of the most important roles of a company officer is being an instructor. So as we talk about training, and I love this because we've all heard the term, right? All company officers are training officers because, right, you're the lead training officer of your crew, of your battalion, of your shift, whatever it may be. But let's go ahead and just throw it out there, right? Not all company officers, will say, both aspiring and current, were instructors of classes as firefighters. They weren't instructors. They weren't teachers. Maybe in a previous career, they didn't grow up and were instructors. But they need be good instructors, right? Because they're responsible for training their crew and themselves. And let's talk about the importance of company officers being instructors. Start there.
Sure. So I was writing some stuff down as you were talking. I think one of the things that is going to help you is your credibility as an instructor. Whether you're standing up in front of a classroom, whether you're standing in front of the bay floor, like your credibility matters. And that goes back to some of the stuff we already talked about. You know, if I'm choosing to promote or I'm looking to promote, I really have that on my radar and I want to be a company officer, then it starts today, right? I develop myself as a good firefighter. Yes, there's a leadership part of it too, of course, but I'm focusing on just being a good firefighter, being good at forcing doors, stretching lines, building construction, strategy and tactics, right? All those things. Because now when I have that gold on my back and it says lieutenant on my shirt and I pull the trucks out of the bay and I'm leading a training program, the people that are there listening to me know that I've done that, right? That I've done it or I'm willing to do so. Like, I've been in a position where I've done those things. I've been in a position where I've gone out and spent time investing, you know, in myself and my development. And now in turn, I can do it with other people. So credibility matters. And I think that's important for us to understand as we move through up the ranks. It doesn't matter what rank. The next piece of your role as an instructor, like I mentioned before, as an officer, you have to learn to train, right? So you have to understand your crew. Everybody in that station is going to have a different gas pedal. You know, I can remember being a new lieutenant, man, and I came in hot. Like, I had a young crew, which was kind of, it was easy for me to do, but I was like, boom, 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 go, go, go. We trained all the time, and most of the folks there really liked it, and some of them didn't. And I got to a point where I can remember thinking to myself, well, this person is on board. They don't learn like these others. They must be something wrong with them. You have to be very careful with that, you know? You have to understand that everybody has a different gas pedal, and you need to work with people right where they sit, not where you think they should be 6 months from now. You know what I mean?
I like that.
So understanding those personalities, understanding who learns different ways. Do I need to do this several times? Do I need to have them put their hands on it? Do I need to just go over this at the galley table first before I go out to the bay? So knowing all the different ways that your folks learn and understand is important. The next thing is your preparation. You know, if you plan on doing some training or a drill or something like that, preparation matters. Now, you can certainly, I wake up today and I go to the firehouse and I have a wild hair at my best. I'm going to run this drill. You could do that, but it might not go very well and you might not be very prepared. And so I always looked ahead on my training calendar. I would sit down if there was another officer in the station, we'd sit down and say, hey, what do we got going on within the next 6 weeks? Let's put this on the calendar. We'd pepper our calendar with different training topics. And I knew, all right, next Friday, we're going to be going over stretching on apartment buildings. We're going to go over setting up a tripod for elevator rescue, whatever it might be. That allowed us to get prepared. We took some notes. I wrote some stuff down. I mean, I would even put stuff on a flashcard as I was out there training just to make sure I hit key things. Instead of just saying, oh, hey, let's just do this today. Again, nothing wrong with it. Right. I'm not saying don't do that. Some people can navigate that just fine, but there's value in preparation. And depending on what it is, I would even tell the crew, like lineup, I'd say, hey, just a heads up, guys, 2 shifts from now on Saturday, we got this training plan. So just be prepared for that. Maybe we can even start, you know, look over the tools the next couple shifts. You have any questions, and we're going to get ready for training on Saturday. So preparation goes a long way.
Matters. Absolutely.
And then the last thing is just the delivery, you know, you have to be mindful of the way people listen. You have to be mindful that you don't marginalize people, that you are not condescending, that you're not just making people demonstrate failure. You know, there's a very, very big difference for me between training and drilling, you know, so.
Okay, elaborate. I love that. Talk about that.
So I'll give you an example of that. So I can remember I was Catmint 1 for downtown, one of our downtown stations for several years. So it's all the high rises. And I said, you know what? We're going to go out and we're going to drill, or we're going to train, I think I said. Right. So we went out, I gave him a scenario and I said, all right, you have to, you know, reach the 10th floor, this amount of time, hose stretch, whatever, search complete, go. So we failed. Like I failed, like they didn't stretch the hose correctly. There were some issues with the fire protection systems. Like there was just some things. And I got to thinking to myself, you know, here I am forcing them into this drill, but I didn't provide any training prior, right? I wasn't really prepared. So I said, look, this is my fault. We're going to fix this. So we went back and it's like, how about we take one day, we go over the policy and we go over how to stretch hose. Boom, check that box. Then the next day, we're going to go over radio communication. Boom, check that box. Then we're going to go over basic strategy and tactics. We're going to go over recon and stairwells. We're going to chip away at a few of these things in training, and then we're going to just drill and I stay out of it. You know, so training to me is, it's slow, it's methodical, it's repetitive. That's the time to screw up. No, we screw up in drills too, but that's the time to do it. Ask questions, do it again, you know, identify our strengths and weaknesses. And then the drilling is just that. Like there's no direction or very little. It's more me hands off. It's here's an objective, go. Okay. And you can be successful at this drill because of the slow methodical training sessions that we did prior to that led up to the drill. Does that make sense?
Oh man, I love it. That makes all the sense in the world. And I wanted you to point that out because there is a difference between training and drilling. I think, at least in my experience, what gets missed a lot is exactly what you're saying is we'll go out there and say, okay, what's the drill today, crew? We'll go out there for 3 hours, we will drill. But their training is more, we're out there with a purpose to learn from each thing, to gain something from each thing, while drilling is out there and performing a skill set. And it's
right.
Yes, you can learn from a drill, absolutely. And I hope you do learn. One does learn from a drill because of failures and for repetition. But training has a specific intent of let's do this, let's do this, let's do this, let's gain this, let's gain this. Yep. Versus drilling is let's just go accomplish something.
Right.
But I love that.
Because people get lost. People get lost in it. Like you could show up at, after line, it's like, all right, we're going to do this drill. Be back in the bay in 20 minutes. We're going to do this. Yep. And the crew might be sitting there like, well, what the hell? Like,
yeah.
We haven't talked about this at all. They were Cam's going to drill us. Like, you know, timing is everything too. You know, like consider firefighters, you know, I always strive for a healthy balance with training in my station. Like there's a time and a place for everything. I remember I had a buddy of mine and he's like, hey man, like we got some issues with this at the firehouse. Like the captain's killing me. And so I'm like, well, what's going on? Like, what's the problem? He's like, well, he's just making us drill all the time. And I'm like, well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. He's like, well, it'll be after dinner and we're just sitting in there like, galley's done, dinner's over, tables are pushed out, and we're all just sitting in there hanging out, drinking coffee, you know. And then Cam walks, it's like, hey, we got a drill. Your scenario is this. And the guy's like, okay. So I remember telling this captain, I'm like, there's nothing that says you can't do that. You're the captain of that firehouse. If you want to pop a drill on them, no problem. But if you continue to do it after dinner in the evening when they've pulled out their t-shirts and they're sitting there drinking coffee and they're relaxing for the day, if you continue to do that, they're gonna kill you. That's just the reality of the firehouse, right?
Agreed.
So it has to be, you know, you have to temper it. You have to make sure it's timed. Yeah, so you got to consider a lot of other things, but definitely a difference between training and drilling. That's my take on it.
And you mentioned time, and I have a star to make sure we talk about time management because it's huge. Because you just talked about a drill, you know, doing a drill at night, and is not that drilling at night's bad? Is it because of lack of time management during the day? Like, why couldn't you drill during the day? It's because you were doing everything else, watching the ball games, all six of those games, and then so. But we'll talk about that in a minute because I do want to just go right back and highlight the four things you just said. Number one, we just talked about one of the most important roles of a CO is being a good instructor. So number one, you said build your credibility. Obviously, you do that as a firefighter. You do that young in your career. You do it throughout your career. But you got to be good at the fundamentals and doing the tasks before you expect to be the person that's telling other people to do the tasks. That's number one. Number two, you said, and I love this piece. You said learn to train because everyone has a different gas pedal, different firefighters. That's something I'm learning myself, right? Like I came from the training division. You know, the crew that I got first out of the training division may – and not have been the crew that was all, you know, not saying that they weren't, you know, ready to train, but a different gas pedal because different crews. So that's huge. And understanding that dynamic is key. You said preparation matters. Absolutely. There's nothing more frustrating than going to, you know, a drill or training session, just, you know, scattered, not all over the place. We all know what a good preparation, a good prepared drill looks like. And then delivery matters. So that is all key. I just wanted to highlight that for the listeners so they didn't forget.
Yeah. The last thing I would add in there, and it kind of circles back to the credibility thing, is like, it's okay if you don't know. You know, sometimes there's pressure, I think, on newer officers, whether it's newly promoted or they're new to that crew, where it's like, oh, I have to prove myself. You know, that'll come with time.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay to screw up. It's okay to fail. It's okay when you're in the middle of a drilling session and everybody's in a half circle and they're looking at you and they ask you a question. It's like, dun dun dun! Oh man! Right. Hey, you know what? I don't know. I have no clue. But let's figure it out. You know, like it's okay to do that. You know, they will respect you more, and that will lend well to your credibility as opposed to just BSing them.
Agreed. Totally agree. And and do it early too. I mean,
yes.
They try to sneak your way through 4 hours later. You know, and I really don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, they're gonna figure it out.
Yeah, this guy has no idea what
they'll
they're doing.
They'll know.
When's he gonna say something? Yes. So, I mean, just because I mentioned time management. So talk about the importance of having good time management in the fire station, whether at a firefighter, company officer level, but in terms of just being a good leader, how important is time management?
So I think it's extremely important. One, you know, that's one resource you're not getting more of. You know, the day is your day. And as you know, it can come and go. You can have a bunch of stuff planned and it gets ruined with calls and just stuff happens, right? But for me, I would always try to in the morning, like every morning when I get to work, I still do it as a battalion chief now. I take a little flashcard or I tear off a little piece of paper. I pull a piece of paper out of the printer machine and I fold it in half and I write down make a to-do list. These are the things that I want to get done today. Now, what's helped me in the past is I mentioned, you know, sitting down, looking out 6 weeks ahead. This is something that I do with the company officers when I was a captain. And I think this will help you with some of your time management also, is we would sit down. I would sit around and say, hey, what do we want to accomplish in the next 6 weeks? What are the priorities? And we would go around the room and we'd say, we need this, we need that, whatever. And so we would prioritize things because we know we can't do it all. Mm-hmm. And we would write it down. We'd put stuff on the calendar. We'd make notes and we'd try to chip away at that. So we knew ahead of time coming in on a Friday or a Thursday or a Wednesday, like we had this planned. So prioritizing what's going on in the fire service in the firehouse actually helped us with our time management also, because it wasn't all this just ad hoc stuff popping up. Boom, we got to take care of this, that, and the other. if you're lucky enough to have multiple officers in the station, this is, doesn't happen for everybody, you know, divide and conquer. You know, when I was a captain at 14, we had, I had two lieutenants there with me as well. You know, it wasn't all on one single person. You know, the one lieutenant managed telestaff. He set the roster. Another one, you know, did health EMS and like all the QA stuff for the fire reports. I might look ahead and plan out the next 6 weeks for the station and just kind of help manage things and get training scheduled and things like that. So it was a shared responsibility, which in turn helped with our time management. Now, you might not have that. It might just be on you and you're going to have to do all of those things. So you have to be even better at it than I am. so again, it's one of those things. Prioritize, make those to-do lists, and then you have to realize that some days they're just losers. Like, you're just not going to be able to get to it.
Yep.
And I know as a, I know for me as a company officer, maybe just firefighters in general, it's like, we got to do it now. We got to get it done. We got to get it done. You know, sometimes it's just not that important. Like, sometimes it can just wait, and that's okay. Yep. So don't feel like you got to get it all done, especially at the expense of your firefighters, because you got to remember, you know, they want some couch time too. Let's be honest. Like, they want some downtime. They want to be able to hang out. They want to be able to mess with each other. They want to watch. That's just the way it is. Right? That's just the firehouse. So if you don't manage your time well and you're busting in on them after dinner to do a drill because you didn't manage your time well throughout the day, you're going to piss them off, man.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So making those to-do lists, looking out several weeks ahead, planning on stuff, again, all of that preparation is going to help you with your time management. And then also being able to say, we're not doing this today, or saying no to things, or kicking off down the next week or next month or whatever it might be. All those things are going to help with your time.
I mean, the time management is huge. I mean, everything you said was so key. It's like sometimes we will let less important things kind of get in the way, I guess. And I don't even want to say get in the way, but they'll trump other things, right? It's like, well, with today's Thursday, we have to get done, you know, bay floors. Nothing. Bay floors aren't important, but bay floors might not be the number one priority of that day. Training your firefighters might be the most important thing for that day, or whatever those things are. But I love how you said you do a to-do list, you do prioritizing, and it just makes sure the most important things are done first. I mean, that's just, that's key. There's no sense in doing the ninth important, most important thing first, and the sixth most important thing, and the number one most important thing didn't get done. I mean, that's unacceptable.
And you know, you can break it down even further. Like for me, I was always for training, I always liked getting on the counter in the morning. You know, I just 8 to 10 was my window. Like, if we're going to do some training, I want to get it done 8 to 10. Now, I didn't always win. Sometimes I'd have to move it with stuff going on, stuff out of service. But so I would try to break my day in pieces. So, you know, I'd usually get to the firehouse at 6 and I'd hop on the computer. Like, all right, between 6 and 7, I'm pretty much staffing, looking at the roster. Things are changing, make sure the trucks are right. But after lineup, I'm like, all right, let me go in the office. And from 7 to 7:30, I'm going to knock out my health EMS reports. So I'm going to go through and make sure I'm not missing any reports. And then if we have any training scheduled from 8 to 10, then I'll knock that out. And then if it's one of those things, if that's the window and we only take an hour to do training, then I don't jam something else in there in that hour. You know, I could, but most times I'm like, you know, just I'll hang out, I'll relax, I'll hang out with the crew, we'll sit on the front bumper and whatever till lunch. Then after lunch, I knew, all right, after lunch, I eat, hang out in the galley a little bit, then I'm going to go back to the office and I'm going to not work on this for, you know, another hour or 2 hours. So you can really structure your day if you're one of those people that needs that. I've done that in the past. I do that actually now as a new battalion chief where I have to help. Cause if I don't, I'll miss stuff. That's just me. Like I'll shirk some of my administrative responsibilities or I'll miss them because I'm like, oh, I want to go hang out in the bay or I just want to go be around the guys.
Yeah.
So I have to be disciplined enough to say, all right, knucklehead, like after lunch, go in the office for a couple hours, get caught up on some of your administrative stuff. And then you can go out and do whatever you need to do or make station rounds or whatever.
Yeah. I love this quote. You said, when you become a leader, you give up the right to think about yourself. I mean, such a powerful statement, right? I mean, there's all kinds of different directions one can take that, right? One says, you know, you are the most important person, right? Because you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. Obviously, a true statement as well. But obviously, when we're talking about leading others and stepping into that role where you have other people, you're responsible for other people, their development, their health and wellness, all the above, you have to think about them, right? So can you run with that concept that you wrote about in your book, you give up the right to think about yourself when you're leading others?
Yeah. So again, it just comes down to that privilege of leadership, kind of like we talked about, right? So knowing when I step foot in the firehouse, like, yes, there's certain things that I need. I need my professional development. I'm worried about my morale, my welfare, and all those things again. But you took that test for a reason. Like, you chose to put yourself in a leadership position, especially in a small unit, typically in a firehouse, right? Where you have these people that you're responsible for. So when you come to work, as soon as you cross that threshold, it's not about you anymore. It's just not. And if you struggle with that, or if you have a hard time doing that, or if you say, well, I'm not going to do that, then I don't know. You might struggle as a company officer, because people are going to see, they may see selfish behavior in you because the intention is not there. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you cross that threshold, it is 100% about your crew, everything, their morale, their welfare, their professional development, everything is about them. I'm not saying you neglect you know, right. We don't overcorrect on, you know, we talk a lot about servant leadership, which is a great style of leadership, right? But we don't overcorrect on that. We don't do it to the point where it's like, well, I'm going to do everything for my crew, but I neglect what I need as well. Or my time, because, you know, we just got done talking about time management. If it's all about my crew, like constantly, it's like, well, what about me? What about my professional development? What about my administrative responsibilities? I have a boss too, right? And I have to make sure that I'm taking care of what I need to take care of. But at the end of the day, it's a mindset thing, truly. Yep. You know, again, you walk through the doors of that firehouse, it is 100% about your crew. It is about you making sure they have the proper training to go out the door and be good firefighters. It is about you setting the right conditions in the firehouse where they have high morale, right? You know, we all have things that go on in our fire departments that can eat away at our morale. Like, you have the ability to create conditions in your firehouse where you can skyrocket morale, right? Even in the face of all that stuff. And then just their welfare, make sure they're taken care of, right? It doesn't matter what it is. I don't care if they need a freaking new pair of pants, on up to things they have going on at home. Like, you have to think about their welfare as well. Yeah. And they're counting on you to do so, because you've put yourself in that position. You've put yourself in that position as their, part of their leadership team. You've put yourself in a position as their company officer. They should be expecting that behavior from you. It's about them.
I have a rhetorical question, but I'm going to ask it.
Yeah.
Because of what you're saying is there's so much, right? It's like, oh my gosh, company has to do this, has to do this, has to do this, responsible for that. Obviously, yes, we willingly put ourselves there as company officers. But here's the question. Should company officers be tired at the end of the day?
Yes, I think they should. Maybe that's because I'm always tired at the end of the day.
Physically, mentally too, right? Obviously.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, I think so. And I think it should be like a good tired, like an accomplished tired.
Exactly.
Where I got all of this stuff done. I took care of this. I took care of that. I got some training in. Like, yeah, I think if you're doing it right, then you're going to go to bed tired at the end of the day. Yeah. You're going to be, you might be the last one to make your bunk. You're going to walk in, the light's still on, and your bunk is still sitting in your, you know, little big old Tupperware, not put out there. Like, yes, I think if you're doing it right and you're taking an active approach to your responsibilities and you're engaged with your crew, yep, you're going to go to bed tired every night.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you're going to go to bed frustrated. It doesn't mean, like, again, it's a good tired, right? It's a rewarding tired. It's I've done what I need to do. I took care of my crew. Like, it took care of me also. But yeah, I think absolutely. You're going to go to bed tired.
Yep. I think so. Yes. Yep. You said also one key point that I also want to point out too, is it, you know, things that, you know, happen in your department, if morale's down, but a company officer can skyrocket that morale. That's exactly what you said. You said that. I'm like, oh, that clicks, because it's so true, right? The power that an individual has, especially a company officer inside their firehouse, regardless of the outside forces, the noise, if you will, outside going on at headquarters and wherever else, other stations, you know, big ticket items that's going on. But the company officer can take care of their company, their firehouse. So skyrocketing morale, I love that. Can you talk about the powerful, or the strength in positivity, or the influence one can have on morale in their firehouse?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, every department has its thing, right? The things that chip away at our morale, whether it be pay, whether it be staffing, whether it be poor leadership at the top, or like, there's a number of things that can that can wear down at people. Now, I always like to say, like, you don't want to go and just, you know, blow smoke and mirrors in front of your crew. And it's like, Everett's all right. You can be cautiously optimistic with your folks, and that's okay. You know, don't BS them either. But it doesn't marginalize, like, just because someone's going to work and they're having fun, and you come in with a positive attitude, it doesn't dismiss those issues that we just talked about, right? Like, there's pay problems, there's morale, there's leadership problems, there's retention problems, there's recruitment problems, there's truck problems, there's, like, those are real problems, and they truly need real, logical, realistic solutions. So I'm not marginalizing that stuff, right?
Right.
But I have seen it. I've seen it with my own two eyes. Like, the company officer absolutely has the ability to skyrocket morale within that firehouse you know, regardless of what's going on outside those four walls. I've seen it, and it's done with their attitude, their action, behavior, their outlook, the way they communicate, with their transparency, their sense of humor. You know, there's so many things that can do that. And so what I always like to remind people of is, you know, if you come to work and you feel like your morale is in the toilet for whatever reason, I would encourage you to at least look inward first. I'm not saying it's your fault, right? But sometimes it is.
Yeah.
You know, we're very quick to say, why doesn't Chief so-and-so, or why doesn't Fire Chief? Why there's a morale problem in the fire department. Why don't they fix it? Man, a lot of times morale can be fixed right there in the firehouse. It just comes down to unit cohesion.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of people ask me, well, how do I boost morale in the firehouse? And it's all those things, right? It's being credible, being trustworthy, being you know, transparent, communicate with them, be honest with them, treat them with respect. And, you know, nothing brings people together more than just doing hard stuff. You know, when you go to a fire, I mean, you ask any firefighter today, what's the best thing for firehouse morale? They're going to tell you what, going to a fire, right?
Yeah.
You're doing hard stuff together.
Yeah.
And you're sitting at the tailboard and you're loading 5-inch back on the truck. You know, nobody's sitting there. At least they've never said it in front of me. I've never said it myself. I've never heard people say it. They're not back there griping about the pay scale.
Right.
They're not back there griping about, I can't believe their recruitment efforts over the last couple. They're talking about the fire.
Exactly.
Like, they're just so lost in the moment, you know? So create those little moments.
Yes.
Create those little moments in the firehouse for them.
Love it. Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, whether it's healthy little shenanigans, of course, like, we have to temper those things. Whether it's making sure people are eating together at mealtimes. Whether it's, you know, going out and doing tough training and maybe making people work hard and sweat together and work hard together. That's what brings people closer, are those little things.
Yep.
So you have to create those conditions in the firehouse. And you can create those conditions in the firehouse as the company officer. And again, it doesn't marginalize the real issues.
Right.
But I've absolutely seen it. You know, I've walked into stations that their morale is through the roof. They're having a freaking ball in there.
Yep.
And then I've walked over to a station, you know, 10 blocks away, and their morale's in the toilet. And you ask yourself, well, what's the difference? Like, they're riding the same rigs. They have the same uniforms. They have the same pay. They're running the same calls. Like, they have the same leadership for the most part. Like, what's the difference?
Right.
The difference is the mindset of the company officer. It's the tempo that's being created by that company officer. They feed off of it.
Yeah. You know? I love that. So you said create those conditions, right? I mean, we talk so much on this podcast about leadership in general. You know, there's a lot of, whether it be curriculum or books out there, talk about the hard skills of leadership, right? You had to be a good leader. You have to be competent, confident, all that stuff. But what's not talked about enough, I think, in my opinion, and a lot of what we've talked about on this podcast, is the soft skills of leadership, if you will, like, right, creating the conditions of morale, of team building. Like, that is a quality that a company officer needs, right? That might not be taught in a class in your development in becoming a company officer, but those are the types of things that, you know, is unarguably necessary for a strong leader, right? To be able to create that environment of, you know, optimism, positivity, where people are fully engaged and want to do more regardless of what you just said, regardless of all the real issues that are happening out there, right? Because there's real issues, believe it or not. But I love that. Create, it's company officer's responsibility to create those conditions.
That was one of the reasons why I added that chapter in my newest edition, because I was starting to hear it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, hear it on occasion, obviously. Morale ebbs and flows, obviously, over the years, and based off what's going on in the department, all those kinds of things. Sometimes it's high, sometimes it's low, but there's things that the company officer that can do consistently when it's high and when it's low, that will keep morale going pretty well, at least at the level of the firehouse. And sometimes, you know, that's all you can do, you know.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think that's one thing that you know, I've had people, how would I fix it in my department? How do I fix morale in my department? I'm like, bro, I don't know. I'm like, what are you now? Well, I'm a company officer. I'm like, well, I can't tell you how to fix morale in your department. I don't have an answer for you. I can tell you how to fix morale in your firehouse.
Exactly.
And then maybe people will see that and they'll be drawn to it and they'll want to do the same thing. But I think sometimes the answer we're looking for is just not there. There's no magic pill that we're going to take. We're going to go to our fire department store and be like, oh my God, morale's through the roof everywhere.
Right, right.
Maybe you're lucky. Maybe it is. That's great. That's a great thing. And maybe that's created by your department leadership.
Yeah.
But the harsh reality is it's not going to be like that everywhere sometimes. It just isn't.
Yeah.
And you can't get, you'll get frustrated by that if you care, but if you care, then you take care of it right where you sit. You worry about your own firehouse first.
Exactly. And a good friend of mine, Eric Rossoff, who out of LA, said this exactly. What you're saying is morale change and culture change starts one firefighter, one firehouse at a time, right? I mean, because you're not going to control everything else. But if every firefighter, every company officer, every firehouse takes care of what they can control inside their firehouse, that's where morale change and, you know, it starts to happen. So,
yeah. And that's a good point that he makes. You know, it's like, it's well, morale, it's a tough thing. You know, like it's a shared responsibility truly of everyone. It's not really on one single person. Like, I think the company officer shoulders a lot of it, you know, the tempo and everything. But realistically, when everybody comes through the door of that firehouse, they make a decision. They make a decision whether they're going to have a good attitude or a bad attitude. They're going to make a decision whether they care or they not care. And they're going to make a decision whether they're going to help their company officer contribute, you know, to creating those conditions, the good conditions of the firehouse, or they're not. So it's really a shared responsibility of everybody. But the company officer certainly can drive the ship, can set the tempo.
Totally agree. What was one of the biggest challenges you faced as an emerging leader?
So I mentioned it earlier, is the not understanding that not everyone thinks like me. You know, when I got promoted to lieutenant, I was very lucky in the years leading up to that. I had a great captain. I worked with people that were super engaged. You know, we showed up to work. We wanted to go to fires. We wanted to go on good EMS calls. Like, we just wanted to do the job. Everybody was just driven and self-start. Like, I was very accustomed to that. And then I get promoted and I get outside of that environment, or I go to another station even right before I was promoted. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, this, I don't like this. Like, not everybody shares the same mindset as me. What's going on here? And so I almost had this approach to them, like, well, because you don't share my same motivation and because you don't love the job like I do, then you're not a good firefighter, you know? And that's just not true.
Right.
You know? And, and so I had to adjust that, and I've isolated people because of that. And, I mean, I still have that challenge today, if I'm being honest, like, you know,
as do I. Yeah.
So it's hard for me. I had to learn, like, all right, you know, everybody's got a different gas pedal. Everybody learns differently. Not everybody is going to come to work. Like, the fire department for some people is just going to be a job, nothing more, nothing less. They're not going to go to conferences. They're not going to do extra training. They're not going to do all those things. And look, here's a reality. Here's another reality. Some of those people are still good firefighters, right? Like, so, you know, they're not the ones going to conferences. They're not doing that. But when they show up at work, they do a good job.
Yeah.
They're doing great. And you need those people.
Yes.
And so we have to be very careful about saying, well, you're not going and you're not doing any extra.
Yeah.
So you must not care about the department. You got to be careful with that.
Yeah.
Because if you treat people that way, they're not going to listen to you. You're going to damage your credibility. You're going to lose trust. So that was one of the things I struggled with as a new lieutenant, was that right there. Like, oh, you don't share the same passion as the fire service that I do, then something must be wrong with you and you don't care about this department. And it was a hard lesson I had to learn.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. That's a key lesson, something that I, you know, resonate with as well. I mean, or will resonate with, because not everybody comes from, we'll just say, you know, the training division, you know, and comes out like, hey, let's go train on everything because I got this newfound knowledge and all this. And not every crew comes from whatever shift where you had all the mentors and you got all the knowledge, but you still got to meet people where they're at. And I think that's key. Because everyone, we would like to believe, right? We have to believe everyone's there for the right reasons. Everyone's there to do a good job. Everyone shows up and wants to just do great, regardless if they have a different gas pedal. So I think that's
And the other thing too is, like, you know, it doesn't mean you waver in your values, you know, by thinking that way. And I also, you know, you can expect that of people, but just don't, you know, don't be surprised when they don't reciprocate. Like, I don't think it's unreasonable for me to go to work and ask my fellow firefighters, my fellow company officers, my fellow battalion chiefs to have the same level of engagement and enthusiasm as I do. I don't think that's an unreasonable request.
Yes.
Or an unreasonable expectation, but just understand that not everybody's going to meet that.
Yes.
It's an unrealistic expectation, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Things that we can do. We're talking about leadership. We're talking about all kinds of different concepts. We're talking about meeting people where they're at. Everyone has a different gas pedal. We talked about time management. We talked about followership. We talked about accountability and all that. But now, if we're going to talk to groups, Chief, we're going to you know, say, hey, everyone's here to try to grow, grab a nugget here and there to kind of continue to become strong leaders. If you were talking to a group of firefighters, let's say they're newer firefighters, and you were going to give them some kind of a tip to say, hey, you start doing this, you'll start to grow and become a strong leader in your role earlier in your career.
Yeah. So for the new folks coming in, whether it's my department or anywhere else, I would say the first thing is trying to learn something every day. There is so much that you have to know. You've already figured that out in your academy. You know, you get a smidget of information in there. You know, we truly graduate probationary firefighters. It is up to you to go out to your firehouse and lean on the firefighters and the company officers in your station to help you develop more to become a good firefighter. Yeah. So try to learn something new every day. There's open your bay door, you look out the window, there's everything you have to be good at.
Yeah.
Fire, EMS, hazmat, tech rescue, elevators, active threat. Good Lord, the list goes on and on. Building construction, it's just like, how do you absorb all this stuff?
Yeah.
So at least try to do something every day, learn something every day. And there's so many resources out there now. I mean, you know, I've been in the fire department for about 20 years now. It's not like I've been around forever, but you know, it's funny the way things evolve. Like there was no podcasts. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't listen to a podcast. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of stuff on YouTube. I think YouTube was around, but I don't think it was like the YouTube of today.
Sure.
So there wasn't stuff on there. You know, yep. I remember going to conferences and buying like fire DVDs and watching them in the firehouse. And you know, that's what it was. And certainly trying to go to conferences and stuff. But the other thing is listen to the kitchen table stories, like spend time in there. People will talk about everything. They'll talk about their financial situation. There's Wall Street bankers in the firehouse, if you didn't find that out already.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's lawyers. There's psychologists. There's school teachers. There's you name it.
Oh yeah, they're there.
They're in there. And then there's firefighters and there's storytellers.
Yes.
So make sure you listen to those things. There's lessons in there somehow.
There
you
is.
Don't always have to be quick to interject and interrupt and ask questions. Sometimes it's good to just sit there and listen.
So let's talk about that real quick before we go to the company officer. Yeah. So now the kitchen table, you just mentioned it, right? Listen at the kitchen table. A lot of knowledge is there. A lot of perspective is there. How important is it to be present and to be learning at that kitchen table in the firehouse?
Oh, it's huge, man. The kitchen table, and we call them galleys in Norfolk, you know.
Okay.
It's like it is the epicenter, right? It is the heart and soul of a firehouse. And, you know, just like the human body, when the heart's sick, the body suffers, right?
Yes.
And you can easily tell in a firehouse if that firehouse is sick. You just take a look at the heart, like if people aren't eating meals together, if they don't congregate in the galley, everybody just kind of scatters. It's easy to tell that that's a symptom of a bigger disease that's going on in that firehouse. So if it's not happening where you're at now, like anything else, push to make it happen.
Make it
right?
happen. I love it.
Throw on a pot of coffee, just sitting there by yourself, drinking your coffee. Someone's going to come walking through there at one point.
Come
and
sit
you just
down,
grab
right?
them. Yeah. Grab them. Hey, sit down. Let's chat about this. Let's chat about it. And then somebody else is going to come walking through and they're going to sit down.
Yes.
So if it's not there, then try to build it. If it is there, then make sure you foster it and you keep it there.
Love it. So now you're talking to brand new company officers or just company officers in general, right? They could be 20-year company officers as well. In terms of being strong leaders, continuing to grow, what would you say to company officers?
Man, there's a lot for the officer. I would say number one, you don't know it all. Like you got promoted, you went through a process, you got promoted and there you are. So you still have a lot to learn. I would say focus on building those relationships. You know, take the first few weeks in that firehouse, wherever you're at, and try to learn those folks, learn their personalities, learn their quirks, you know, what inspires them, what drives them, what motivates them, all those kinds of things. So just like you were a student of the game as a firefighter, learn how to force doors and search buildings and stretch lines. Now you need to be a student of people and understand behavior and conflict and all those kinds of things. You know, because as an officer, 90% of the fires you're going to put out are going to be right there in that firehouse. You know, the structure fires and the calls will become the easy things for you probably.
Yes.
So
yep.
understand those personalities and learn to manage conflict because it's common. I mean, you put enough people around each other for long enough, there's going to be some conflict. It's
Absolutely.
Just going to happen. And you have to understand that it's normal.
Yep.
And you have to just understand there's things that happen within human behavior that you're not changing. You just have to kind of guide and direct and manage.
Yep.
The other thing is keep your ego in check,
mm-hmm.
right? And stay proficient as a firefighter. Like, again, you're still riding the truck. You're still at the company level. You're still out there playing that role as an instructor. So you have to be good at those skills as well, so, while developing some of those softer skills that maybe you didn't pay too much attention to, like empathy and listening and things like that. So
absolutely.
Manage your own emotional intelligence and keep your ego in check and stay proficient as a firefighter. And that's it. You know, when it comes to some of the stuff you're going to figure out along the way, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to screw up. I make them every day. But just know that you're fallible, and that because you make one mistake on a call or you handled a conversation the wrong way, it's not the end of your credibility. You can correct and you learn and you move on.
All right. You're talking to chief officers or just senior members of an organization. In terms of leadership, how can those individuals continue to grow?
So this is the category I fall in now, right? I would say some of the stuff that we talked about earlier, right? Continuing to focus on my professional development, applicable at my level, you know, like still continuing to understand how to lead and manage people, how to take a more global view of the fire department from a management perspective. That really wasn't always a sexy thing when I was a firefighter, right? But now as a chief officer, those are the things that we have to look at. I think the one main thing is just don't lose sight of what's important. And that is the mission of your fire department. Like you have a mission driven organization, right? Like there's a lot of things that the fire department does, but there's one thing that is going to happen consistently every single day in your organizations. And the doors are going to go up.
Yep.
The rigs are going to go on fires. They're going to go on medical emergencies. Like they're going out there to fulfill the mission. So you need to give them the tools and the resources and the training to do so. Like everything should be mission specific, from the training that you provide your firefighters to the way you spec your rigs. Everything should be driven from the mission, because at the end of the day, that is what's going to make, that's what keeps your organization afloat, is the firefighters going out the bay doors, making decisions. So give them the tools and resources to do that. And don't get so caught up in our own ivory tower that we forget those are the things that happen every single day. And those are the people that we need to support every single day. So look out for folks and do right by them. You know, be honest with them, treat them fair. And I would say treat those people fair doesn't always mean you treat people equal, if that makes sense. So treat people fair based off their work ethic and their merit and what they bring to the table and the organization and what they do for other people.
Yep.
And then reward those risk takers. Right, those people that are constantly like, "Hey, chief, I got something for you." Hey, chief. Hey, chief. Hey, chief. The ones that are just bugging the hell out of you all the time. Listen to those people.
Yeah.
Right. Reward those risk takers, because those are the ones that are knocking on your door all the time with ideas and projects, and they want to change host spec, and they want to add this, and they want to add this new committee. Those are the folks that are going to be the ones that are moving your organization forward. So reward those risk takers, even when they fail. Get behind them.
I love that. Yeah, reward. I mean, we had a Frank Lee on the show a month or so ago. He talked about reward and celebrate your people. Because they're doing good things, right? And not many of them, not all of them get noticed, but it's very important to reward those, because we notice, right? We do notice, and those
people
deserve some kind of, not just recognition, but sometimes recognition, but sometimes just being aware that they're doing good things, and you know that goes a long way for your people. So, listeners challenge and leadership challenge, and that's how we usually end the show. It's an amazing way to close down the show. But if you were going to challenge all the listeners today that are tuning in today to your message, which is a great message, by the way, what would you ask of all them to do?
So it was a leadership podcast, so I try to stick with that. And one thing that we already mentioned. So my challenge to all the listeners is to work on improving those soft leadership skills, things that we're not always very good at, things that I wasn't always very good at, things that I kind of ignored and said, "Wow, why the heck do I even need to know that stuff? This is all about the job, you know?"
Yep.
So these aren't always things that always is as sexy as what happens on the fire ground, you know, but learning to show empathy and listening and being self-aware of your mistakes and your shortcomings, that's what's going to set you apart as a company officer. Because most of us, right, most of us, if not all of us, we can be good at the fire ground stuff. We can do that, and that will add well to your credibility. But take your credibility a step further. Set yourself apart by also harnessing those soft skills as well. It doesn't make you a weak leader. It doesn't make you soft. It makes you good. It makes you an effective leader.
Absolutely.
So those things are essential. Because like I said, you know, it's sometimes you're going to go back to the bay. You do great on the fire ground, but you know, you pull the trucks in the bay and you know, you have all these problems at 2-alarm fire in the firehouse that you haven't been managing for several months or maybe even years, because we can't deal with people and manage our own emotional intelligence.
Yes. So I'm going to ask a quick question, Chief, before we just jump to the leadership challenge. You mentioned the soft skills of leadership, right? We're 49 episodes in, into the Kitchen Table podcast. And if not all 49, 47, 48 of them, the leaders and guests have talked about soft skills of leadership and something that wasn't talked about much, right? We'll go back to 80s, 90s, right? We weren't talking about emotional intelligence. We weren't talking about empathy. We weren't talking about self-awareness, right? We're talking about it now. We know it's necessary through experience, to research, all the above. So a question I have for you, Chief, is as we continue to talk about soft skills of leadership on this show from the different leaders, where does that come from? Meaning, where did you get soft skill leadership development? When did you become aware that it was a necessity in being an effective leader, company officer? And then how would you suggest others go out there and develop themselves in soft skills?
So when I knew I needed it was when I was promoted to lieutenant. You know, the captain that I had was very good at all the fireground stuff and all that. He was still good at some of those soft skills too. But I didn't really pay attention to them probably enough as I should have, because I thought to myself, well, why am I going to need to worry about that? So I wasn't socially aware. The relationships that I had, I managed, they were really just the ones in the firehouse. I didn't really build and grow the ones outside of my own firehouse, because I felt like I really didn't need to, right? Because it was just about me and the guys at the station too, who cared about what everybody else did. So I wasn't really self-aware. I didn't have any of those things, and I didn't realize it until I got promoted. And then now, you know, here I am in this position where everybody's, you know, they're coming to me for answers, they're looking to me for guidance, and I have to be able to reach him or her on different levels. And I was like, man, I'm struggling in this area. I need to figure out how to do this a little bit more. So I went on and I started taking classes on it. I started reading books on it. I started learning podcasts about it. I'm like, well, what is this stuff that people are talking about? What are these soft skills I need to understand? Like, you know, listening and empathy and compassion and being self-aware and relationship management and social awareness and all these things. And I'm like, damn, there might be something to this. And so I would try to put that into practice, because you could listen to all those things. You could read the books. Sometimes putting it into practice is the hard things.
Yes.
And so I would find opportunities like, all right, I got to sit down and counsel somebody today. I'm like, oh, this is an opportunity. This is where I can manage my own emotions. This is where I'd be self-aware. This is where I pay attention to the way I say things. This is the, you know, I don't want, there's little opportunities that you can have to help you kind of work through some of that. But, but early on, didn't think it was important.
Yeah.
I didn't care about it until I got promoted. And I was like, damn, you know, working with people, you know, it's a lot, working with this person is a lot more different than just working with this set of irons. Like I need to be able to do both.
It sounds like you took it upon yourself, right? So you became a lieutenant, and then you recognize, right? And that's a soft skill within it of itself, is the recognition and self-awareness of yourself. These are skills that I need to develop. And it was something that you said, you know what? I'm going to go read on this. I'm going to go YouTube this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get a book on this. I'm going to learn about this. And then I'm going to put this into play. Like that, there's a lot of, what would you say? A lot of humility there. There's a lot of go-getting there, and something that not everyone's doing. But I love that being a listener's challenge in terms of development of soft skill leadership, because yes, there are going to be continue to be leaders, not just in the fire service, but in all industries that are going to, we'll just say, lack in certain areas in soft skills,
sure.
But then recognizing, and then what are you going to do about it? Right. Because not every organization is going to say, all right, now you are a leader, or now you're aspiring, and we're going to send you through a 3-day emotional intelligence communications class. It's just not going to happen.
It's going to
be self-admittance. That's okay. Fail along the way. Go ahead and learn and then apply.
Yep.
So thank you for that, Chief. Okay. So the leadership challenge. We're here today because of the leadership challenge from Chief Dennis Stone. Thank you again, Chief, for accepting that challenge. Is there someone out there that you'd like to challenge to be a future guest on the Kitchen Table?
Yeah, there's like I mentioned before, there's a number that I could throw out there, but the one I wanted to offer to you is Spencer Davis. So Spencer worked with me for a little while over at Station 14. He was a lieutenant over there, assigned to the rescue company, and then assigned to the ladder company, and just a really smart guy. And one that when I went there as a captain, I learned a lot from him as a captain. You know, I'm not a tech rescue guy. You know, I try to be good at it, have a basic understanding, because I was at tech rescue station. Spencer like really, really made me comfortable with a lot of stuff. Still have a lot to learn. I'm still not great, but he gave me that good basic understanding of like, this stuff makes sense. I know why we're doing these things. I would watch Spencer work with the crew. He was able to earn their trust. They listened to him. They paid attention to him. He was able to do those things that we talked about and create those conditions in the firehouse. And so he actually just got promoted to captain a couple weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
And he's going to my he's staying in my battalion, which is cool. So he's going over to Station 10, so I'll still be able to work with him. But I think he has great leadership potential. I think he can do a lot for the department. He has a passion for the fire service. He has that ability to improve station morale with his attitude and his outlook that we talked about. And I think he'll be a good guest because, you know, going through the script that you provide, it'll allow him to kind of reflect on the things that he's done throughout the course of his career. And then maybe even offer some perspective as, hey, you got a new captain. You know, he's going from a station where he was a lieutenant. He had a captain and another lieutenant with a bunch of people where now it's all on him, right?
Yeah.
He's the one at the helm, and he can drive that ship any direction he chooses at this point. So I think he'd be a good one to bring on, and he'd be a good addition.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, again, the success of the podcast is just simply that. Those that are willing to share new perspectives to help us continue to grow as leaders. So I want to thank you again so much, Chief, for being a guest today. What a phenomenal conversation. I love
it was fun.
You know, everything we talked about. But before we close, do you have any lasting leadership thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with before we officially close on episode 49 today?
Yeah. And some of it we'll go back to some of the stuff we talked about, but
please,
I just reinforce that anyone can read books. They can write down leadership attributes, all that kind of stuff. We could talk about them in a lecture, but it's sometimes that practical application that's just not always easy, right? For me or for anybody, it's just not always so easy sometimes. So successful leaders are in a constant state of self-awareness and self-reflection. It's an ongoing process, right? They're constantly taking stock of what's worked, what didn't, you know, and trust me, you're going to make decisions that you're going to regret later. That's it. That's life. That's growth. That's leadership. I know I have, I've made decisions that I've regretted later. I've said things that I wish I wouldn't have. And that's just the way it is. And hopefully I've learned from those things. It's all part of that growth and learning. So, you know, the next thing is that remember when the bell goes off, when the brass hits, there's no excuses. When the rigs roll out, you should be aiming for excellence. If you're a company officer, you should be teaching and training your firefighters to be good firefighters. If you're a battalion chief, then you should be making sure your folks are preparing for their next incident. I don't care if you're a firefighter or chief officer, it doesn't matter what position you're in, you should exude competence in your actions and your decision making because people are accounting on you. So stay focused on your professional development. Like we mentioned before, there's no rank that you hit a finish line. There's no rank that gives you the right to hang up the need to continue learning. So constantly strive for that. And the last thing is find balance in your life. Mm-hmm. The fire department's a great place, but it's also a place that you can easily become consumed because of the camaraderie, because of the relationships that you make, because of the type of job that you do. It's easy to get consumed in it, which is a good thing, but it could be a bad thing if you let it completely swallow you. So find balance in your life. Find an outlet outside the fire department that allows you to detach every now and then, whether that's a hobby, whether it's fishing, whether it's exercise, whether it's jujitsu, whatever, it doesn't matter what it is. You have to find that balance. It's good for you and it's good for your mental health. It's good for your family. It's good for your friends. So try to seek that balance.
What a great message. Thank you, Chief. Yeah, No Nonsense Leadership, Volume 2 is out. Yes, for
yep,
listeners.
Yep, the second edition's out. Yep.
Second edition's out. So No Nonsense Leadership, A Realistic Approach for the Company Officer, forward by Chief Dennis Doan, and Jared Sergi is the author. Great book. Thank you, Chief. And I am going to get your second edition because the first one, what happens is I read the book, I highlight the crap out of it, and then I share it, bring it to the fire station.
Yeah, I'll get you one.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today to The Kitchen Table. We truly hope that you found this time valuable, and we hope we've inspired you to take action, to lead, and to spread the leadership conversation. Till next time, be safe, be intentional, and stay curious.